I'm Rodrigo Blankenship, and you're listening to the Savage Pads Podcast.
Welcome to part two of Best of Season 3 of the Savage Pads Podcast. This is our Peach Bowl week special, and we are revisiting interviews with Mark Schlabaugh, Bruce Rawlinson, Chris Durham, Vince Dooley, David Pollack, Billy Bennett, and Ben Watson. Wow, what a list. It's quite an honor to have had the opportunity to speak with each of these individuals throughout the season. It's always fun to look back and hear what our thoughts were all throughout the season. And so I thought it'd be a fun way to recap what's been a crazy year for Georgia football. But for those of you that have been listening all year, man, appreciate your listenership. and hope that this last episode is a treat for you all. Wish you a happy New Year. Go Dogs.
Practice every day.
Man, oh man. Mono ain't mono.
He definitely 6 hour reminds me and myself. As close as we have right now to rope on.
When we score, I honestly did not know where I was for about 5 seconds.
Early on, you could see with Jake, you know, just like with Fran talking to him.
Maybe one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the country.
And we got to keep feeding the running back.
I don't think we've yet to see the tight ends.
I think Georgia does a great job of bringing pressure on third down.
Turn around 2 weeks later in the SEC championship, we look like a completely different team, and we made them look like a completely different team.
I mean, it's hard to get emotional thinking about it.
And it was my job to kind of get outside the corner. And
as soon as I let it go, I knew it was good.
From that point on, I kind of began to trust the Eric Murray as my quarterback.
The kid was just special.
I was famous. He was onside.
Everybody respects the specs.
That's what every Georgia fan should hinge their hopes on.
Alabama and Georgia are the best two teams in the country.
I feel like we are the true running back youth.
I have great confidence that we're going to see the personification of Georgia football.
Welcome to the Savage Pads Podcast. Okay, so this first segment, preseason predictions with ESPN's Mark Schlabaugh. Mark was incredibly kind to take a moment of his time to join the Savage Pads Podcast and speak on a topic I know that's near and dear to him, and that is Georgia football. Revisiting Mark's preseason predictions, the most interesting thing to me is that when Jamie Newman opted out of the season, he predicted a big year for JT Daniels. Obviously, things didn't turn out quite how we hoped for JT as far as the number of games he was able to play, but certainly performed at the kind of level Mark expected of him when we spoke earlier in the season. As of September 13th, you still had Georgia making the college football playoff despite the departure of Jamie Newman. What gives you confidence that this team has what it takes to have a special season?
Let me point out also, I made those predictions before the Big Ten decided they were going to play football this year.
Right.
So I need to revisit that.
Right.
Because Ohio State probably grabs one of those four spots now. But
yeah,
I'm a big believer in defense. And this is a defense that is talented, athletic, and very deep, particularly at linebacker and on the defensive line. I think he's got a chance to be the best defense Kirby Smart has put on the field. I think the loss of Jamie Newman, who opted out a couple weeks ago, certainly stings. But, you know, with the offensive line they've got coming back and the depth at tailback with Samir White and James Cook and DeJuan Edwards, I think you just got to have a guy that's not going to get you beat. And whether that's DeJuan Mathis or JT Daniels, I think as long as they take care of the football and can make some plays, I think they'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, clearly defense is the strong suit for Georgia. And Georgia skeptics will argue that while there are guys like James Cook and Zamir White, there's talent on the offense, that Georgia will have lost too much talent this offseason to truly compete for a playoff spot in a national championship. Between the draft and injury and transfer and opt-out, the Dogs have lost key players at nearly every position. You look at quarterback Fromm and Newman, Swift and Herrien at running back, Cager Blaylock, receiver, Charlie Warner, tight end, both tackles, Kinley and Mays at guard, and we forget about Rodrigo Blankenship as well, but he scored some points for Georgia over the years. With all of those departures, many fans actually still expect improvement from the offense in 2020, due in part to the arrival of offensive coordinator Todd Monken. What are your expectations for his offense in year one at Georgia?
That's a good question. I think it's going to look different. I think uh-huh. you'll see guards pulling. I think you'll see toss sweeps. I think you'll see them trying to get the ball in Cook's hands in open space. I think if it's Dwan Mathis, I think he brings more of a dual threat possibility to the equation. He's more mobile than Jake Fromm. I think he's more mobile than Jamie Newman would have been. I think the big question is, they didn't have a spring practice.
Mm-hmm.
Preseason camp's been a little bit disjointed. So, how much installation have they actually been able to do, and how familiar are these guys going to go be with the system? So I think that, I think that could be a potential pitfall for any team that made a big change in terms of philosophy and system. So we'll just have to see what happens first couple weeks.
Yeah. Clearly, there's going to be someone different behind center this year, and no position is more important to an offense than that. Quarterback's been the topic of conversation in recent weeks, especially after Newman's departure, as you mentioned. Based on last week's semi-open scrimmage, there's been a lot of speculation about Dwan taking over the reins at QB1, and perhaps he will, but you recently predicted former USC quarterback JT Daniels to be the SEC's best transfer this season. If that comes to be true, he's obviously going to have to play. But can you let Dog fans in on what you know about JT and what he might bring to that offense at Georgia?
Yeah, I think he was a kid. A lot of that was more on potential than anything. Mm-hmm. I had Newman in there and then just swapped out Daniels for
gotcha.
Him. I think Kate at Mississippi State or some other guys would have a possibility. Even Jermaine Burton, the Georgia freshman receiver who I've heard a lot of good things about over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
JT was a kid. He graduated early. I think he might have only been 17 when he enrolled, started as a true freshman. Played well for a freshman, in that system. I think he started the opener there. I thought played admirably well for a guy that was a true freshman starting at USC.
Mm-hmm.
Last year was the projected starter again and got hurt in the first week, tore his ACL, and hasn't played since. Did not know until earlier this week that they had to go back in December mm-hmm. and scope his knee again to clean it up a little bit from the post-ACL surgery. So, that's a little bit of a concern. But, I think he's a guy that if it's not this year, maybe it's next year, that he can definitely have some sort of an impact.
So Mark gave us some thoughts on JT Daniels, but we wanted the real scoop on him before the Auburn game. I think at the time, the thinking was that JT was going to maybe play in that game, maybe start for Georgia because he had been cleared. Nobody really knew what to expect from him. I know Dog fans were all on YouTube watching his USC highlights and even his highlights at Modern Day. But Modern Day head coach Bruce Rawlinson and national championship Modern Day head coach Bruce Rawlinson joined us to discuss JT. And for those of you that aren't familiar with Bruce, this man has coached quite the list of high school quarterbacks who went on to become Heisman Trophy candidates and Heisman Trophy winners. And even currently guys like JT Daniels, who's obviously starting for Georgia, and Bryce Young, who was the number one quarterback in last year's class and who looks to be the next starting quarterback for the University of Alabama. So Bruce knows quarterbacks, and he pretty much was spot on in explaining what Dog fans could expect from JT Daniels before we ever saw him play wearing the red and black. I loved this episode, and I'm now a fan of Modern Day. So go Modern Day, and thank you to Coach Rawlinson for joining us.
He'll have no problem adjusting, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the one thing I know, the little bit that I've seen of Georgia, you got a big old offensive line that'll buy him some time.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have some of the best receivers in the country, then Kirby's not doing his job.
Right.
And JT's not a selfish player. He's got no problem with play action. He's got no problem handing the ball off. He just wants to win. And whatever route that takes him, but I'm hoping they give him a lot of rope early. And you know, the Georgia fans are probably going, this high school guy probably should retire. And I say that because he can handle it. You know,
yeah.
don't restrict the package. Put him in a position. He'll accomplish what you want to accomplish and turn him loose. And hopefully, and then the problem is with COVID and everything, he hasn't had a chance to really show that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody would probably say, like, we got to limit what he does. I don't think you limit JT Daniels because mentally he's so far past anybody I've ever been around. I mean, Bryce was, you know, the great ones have that ability. They don't want to go to lunch with the rest of the student body. They want to watch video with the offensive coordinator,
right,
if that makes mm-hmm. sense.
Absolutely.
You know, that was JT. So I think you guys are in for some excitement. You know, one thing I know is, you know, people say, well, you know, it's just for JT doesn't care. Okay. I'm telling you, the bigger the game, the bigger he plays. You know, well, you know, do you think he'll be nervous? No, absolutely not. Okay. He'll have a big old smile on his face. and I'm telling you, just let that kid just turn it loose. Give him the playbook. And by the end of the game, everybody's going to be going, all right, you know, we can get serious about stuff now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all around, it seems like JT Daniels has pretty much all the attributes Todd Monken's looking for in a quarterback. And I can certainly understand how those two aligned and decided to team up when JT was looking to transfer.
Yeah.
But there was another transfer already on campus in Jamie Newman when JT put in his papers to transfer to Georgia.
Yeah.
What do you know about JT's recruitment process this go-round and why he decided to attend a school that seemed set at quarterback?
I would tell you this. You know, I wasn't that involved in mm-hmm. it.
Sure.
I think everything was done above board, but the fact that the head coach called him mm-hmm. very shortly after he hit the portal,
mm-hmm.
I think that had a big impression on him, 'cause let's cut the crap, it's Kirby Smart of Georgia. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, he didn't have an assistant, you know, he didn't have an assistant call to feel it out.
Uh-huh.
At least this is what I've been told.
Okay.
And you know, you're dealing with a smart kid. I mean, you know, think about this, Doug. Okay, when he reclassified, he had to take 9 classes in his junior second semester. Okay.
Yeah.
6 of them on campus and 3 of them online in order to get all the graduation requirements for Modern Day and also to satisfy USC admissions. And, you know, the kid had a 3.8, you know, and he was pissed that he took a B in a class because he didn't want to deal with the online teacher anymore. You know, he's a smart kid.
Uh-huh.
And I think there was a connection, a chemistry, because he had the opportunity to speak with the offensive coordinator, and it just clicked. You know, I think they asked me what I thought, and I said, that's the offense you need to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't need to be in, you know, an air raid or anything like that, or a zone read offense. You know, you're in an offense. And I said, look, you know, I've always believed this, man. You can have Johnny Unitas at quarterback, but if you ain't got some dudes up front, you know, you just got a lot of potential back there. You got a Cadillac, but it's out of gas, you know. I mean, he's going to get protected and he's got big old backs. So, you know, but that connection, I think, was the other thing that kind of pushed him over the top.
Yeah.
Competition, JT could care less.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm telling you, I like kids like JT. Okay. Like Bryce Young.
Uh-huh.
They have that perfect blend of confidence, cockiness and arrogance. And some kids have a little too much of that,
right?
You know, and not enough of the other. But always remember, JT Daniels was a great classmate, and he was a great teammate. Mm-hmm. You know, he had just as much fun as any other kid. But when it was time to dial it in, JT dialed it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, JT's knee injury has kind of been a concern among fans, at least in the state of Georgia this previous week. Everyone knows he's cleared, but no one's exactly sure if he's the same player he was. People never know with these kinds of things. Reportedly, JT underwent a second surgery in the winter to clean up some things from the original ACL tear. What can you tell listeners about JT's recovery and the complications that have prolonged his return to play?
You know, I don't know mm-hmm. enough to make a comment about the complications. I just don't. Mm-hmm. But you and I know, okay, I mean, most of the time that injury is usually, you know, it's usually a year, and it was just yeah. about a year. You know, I don't know the severity of the injury. Here's what I do know. He had the top surgeons. He had the top rehabilitation therapists mm-hmm. when he was in Southern California, and he continued to work with those people. Okay. It's the University of Georgia. I imagine they have some pretty good rehabilitation therapists
right.
and have seen a few injuries and brought kids back. I wouldn't be worried about that,
yeah.
okay?
Yeah.
Because one thing is, JT will not fast forward that. He's too smart, okay? And when I say that, you know, he knows that he's got to have everything lined up. He knows his body. His mom and dad are extremely supportive, and believe it or not, his mom is hugely well versed in nutrition mm-hmm. and supplements and things like that. You know, the kid's a freshman in high school, and he's got the best diet I've ever seen. You know, I mean, literally, I said, okay, JT, why don't you design the nutrition program? Cause yours looks better than what my experts are telling me. You know, I guarantee you JT probably was ready 2 weeks ago, probably was ready last week and could have gone, but the medical experts have mm-hmm. made the decision, but mm-hmm. he's not going to put himself in jeopardy.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't either if I were him.
Some of my favorite Savage Pads podcast segments are when former players or coaches join us and we discuss something other than Georgia's upcoming matchup, other than Georgia football in the present day. And when Chris Durham joined this year, I really enjoyed hearing from him about his experience playing Italian football. So for those of you that don't know, Chris was a great receiver at UGA, went on to have an NFL career, played with Matt Stafford in Detroit, but he didn't want to hang up the cleats quite yet when his NFL career was over. And so he went over to Parma, Italy, and had a career there. And he shared with us on what it's like to play Italian football after playing in stadiums in front of 100,000 people every Sunday. He also shared on his quarantine in Italy. Really enjoyed Chris's thoughts on everything and just our conversation. Hope you guys enjoy this one.
My body wasn't responding like I, my last game there, my body just wasn't having it anymore. And that was
yeah.
kind of the telltale sign that it was time for me, especially considering, you know, you are truly playing for pizza in a sense. So it was time for me to hang up the cleats.
Yeah. So you're playing for pizza. What led you to do that? What, after playing in the NFL for a while and playing in the SEC, what led you to play for pizza in the Italian Football League?
I don't know how many people actually know there is a book called Playing for Pizza. That's why I used to reference the John Grisham novel.
Yeah.
And So the whole story behind that is that in 2012, when I arrived in Detroit, Matthew's an avid reader, like always learning, always doing stuff like that right there. And he actually had given the book to me in Detroit in 2012, and I read it. And the whole premise of the story was about a quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, was playing in the AFC Championship. He's third string, both first and second go down with injury. He comes in and they end up losing the game, and he's kind of blacklisted from the NFL. And he ends up in a city called Parma, Italy, playing for the Parma Panthers. And it's all about his journey and his experience in Parma. Well, fast forward, 5 years later in 2017, I get contacted by our team president over in Parma, Ugo Bombaccini. And Ugo, recruits me to come play in Parma. And long story short, I kind of remembered the book. Why did I know about Parma besides the food? And I decided to go over there and still had the itch to play. And ever since then, I've loved Parma. I love the culture. I love the language and the atmosphere and everything there is to do with being over there. And I spent 2 seasons with those guys, and I still go back pretty frequently to visit.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I've never been to Italy, but I can't imagine moving over there to play American football. Anyway, that's why I respect the love of the game to go out to Parma just to play ball, eat some pizza.
Oh, I'm telling you, I could talk about Parma all day, every day, because Parma is literally back to why you play the game when you're in high school, why you play the game when you're young. You just love the game. You love competing. And most guys over there, they have 9-to-5. It's a club sport for them. I mean, we have practice 3 days a week. Sometimes we don't even, because guys have to work, sometimes we don't even have enough offensive or defensive linemen to run a full practice. And, it's frustrating at times, but it's also somewhat beautiful because, after the game, I went from playing in Seattle and playing in Georgia and playing in Detroit and doing all this in front of, 70, 80, 100,000 people every week to my games over there. The first game I played in, we had to wait for 15 and under soccer team to get off the field so we could go play our game. And there were 100 people in the stands. It was an eye-opening experience, but it didn't matter because guys were out there, their moms, dads, girlfriends, grandparents, everyone was there after the game. The other team doesn't rush off. They hang out. They grab beers. They just sit there. We eat on the field after the game and just hang out for probably 2 hours before everyone kind of goes on their way. Grandmas are down there with food they baked and brought to the stadium.
Yeah.
So it was really cool. Fell back in love with the game. And I'm still, this morning I was talking to the team president and the other guy trying to find a coach for next year. We don't have a defensive coordinator, head coach. We got a guy who can do offense, but he's not ready to be a head coach. And so we're trying to figure it out because we had, unfortunately, the last 2 years, our one coach had been there for 14 years. He and his wife moved back to the U.S. because he was, he came over to play and then met a girl, got married, and was the head coach for 10 years. But they decided to move with their kids back to the U.S.
Yeah.
And then our coach last year practiced on Friday. It was a week or 2 weeks before the first game. He had a brain aneurysm and didn't make it. And so that's when that happened, right, was I was coming up. That happened Friday, and I landed, Saturday.
Yeah. Wow. So
he literally died, and I was, leaving. I was oh, my God.
Yeah.
So he had been our defensive coordinator for 20 years. Been with the team since, 1988. And it was his first year being the head coach and just passed away. And I was so now we're trying to find coaches and do all that stuff.
Yeah. Wow. That,
wild times.
That's a lot, especially.
Yeah, so if you know anybody that's a coach or, retired coach that wants to enjoy a basically a once in a lifetime paid vacation in Italy, let me know.
Man, I would do it if I knew anything about defensive coordinating. Italy's seems like a desirable place to do a kind of short stint like that. So if I think of anybody, I'll let you know. But you made headlines in March after tweeting out a video from your quarantine in Italy at the beginning of coronavirus. So at that time, coronavirus was foreign to those of us in America. It was with the thought of quarantine and all of that just seemed drastic. So how did you end up stuck in Italy and what was that like for you?
So I went over to help coach and kind of help the guys get ready for the season in February. So the season in Parma is a spring league. So it generally goes, guys come over in January or February and it goes through like June, July, excuse me. And so I went over in February. My girlfriend is actually from Parma. So
okay.
That was part of the motivation to continue to stay with those guys. And
do all I got stuff. You.
But, you know, so I went to Parma to, you know, for a few weeks and I had kind of heard of coronavirus as I was leaving in early February, kind of right after the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, you kind of heard it, but it wasn't as big of a deal. It's kind of only in China, all of that. And once I arrived in Italy about, I want to say three weeks later, everything started kind of blowing up. And next thing I know, like, Carol's like not able to go to work and she works in Milan and she's not able to go because they're starting to shut down the city and they're starting to have everything go on there. And next thing I know, they've literally locked down the entire cities. Like you can't travel from one region to the next, which is kind of the equivalent from going like from Georgia to Tennessee. You can't travel between regions. Everything's kind of locked down. And if you do, you actually have to fill out paperwork to go, like government paperwork. It's not hard. It was just like a website. You just download it and type in what you're doing and where you're coming from. And if you got stopped, you just show them. So it wasn't like a big deal.
Gotcha.
You know, we're in quarantine there for a few weeks and, you know, as everything kind of got shut down, I saw it as the U.S. was starting to shut down and shut down travel. I was able to, kind of come back there at the end of, March. I was able to kind of make it back to the States right as soon as we shut down. So I was basically in quarantine for, you know, in Italy for about 2-3 weeks, got home, quarantined myself for 2-3 weeks. And then the U.S. kind of shut down and I was just like, stuck in my house going stir crazy.
Yeah. So it sounds like the virus kind of followed you. I mean, I'm not saying that you brought it over or anything.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Going into Georgia's matchup with Alabama, which we forget now, but I mean, that was such a highly anticipated matchup, something that Dog fans have marked on their calendars for years. David Pollack joined the show to discuss Georgia's pass rush and how they might get to Mac Jones and Georgia's struggling offense and how they might have some opportunities against a Bama defense that was struggling at the time, as well as the matchup between Georgia's stellar defense at the time and Alabama's incredible offense. So there's no mind in broadcasting better than David Pollack's. Guy knows football. He's so gifted at enlightening fans. And I hope you guys enjoy revisiting this conversation, although the outcome of the game certainly didn't go how Dog fans wanted.
In order for Georgia to win, they're going to have to get some pressure on the quarterback on Saturday. Mac Jones last week was just hanging out back there, it seemed like. And so I'm curious, with you being an expert in getting to the quarterback, how do you think Georgia's pass rush can create pressure going up against Alabama's vaunted offensive line?
It's the best pass rush I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
They got several things going for them. One, they got a double-digit sack guy, I think. I think Adam Anderson's that guy. He's definitely taken the next steps of being able to bend and turn the corner and get to the quarterback. He's not put it all together yet. He's always had a great frame and good twitch and good length, and now he's starting to put it all together. And when you have a guy that can, you know, they can go get the quarterback without blitzing, it's a huge advantage, man. So I think you can do that. Azeed can do that. Travion inside can do that. I mean, just keep naming names. They have so many guys that can rush the pass, or they have so much depth that they can rotate across the defensive line front. Everybody gets to stay
stay fit, stay fresh, or stay fresh is the word, stay fresh and not have to worry about playing 55,000 snaps. You know, everybody, there's very little drop off, if any, between guy to guy. And so I think the pass rush is definitely good. I think Tyson Campbell's also emerged as a corner that you can trust to play the number one wide receiver. So yeah. Those are a couple things that are different than Georgia's teams in the past. I think if there's a weakness or a vulnerability, I think it's going to be interesting to watch the interior of the pass defense. And when I say that, I mean like Webb, Stevenson, can those guys hold up? Because if I'm Alabama, that's where I'm going to attack this defense.
Right.
They've got Waddle in the slot. They can put whoever they want in the slot. They've got dudes again. If you're not watching, they've got plenty of firepower.
Yeah.
But the pass rush for Georgia is definitely as good as it's been in a long, long time. I'd have to pull back from the memory bank. First of all, I think Jarvis is the last guy to be a double digit sack guy.
Yeah.
So it's been a hot minute, bro.
Well, regardless of who's in at quarterback, it just feels like an inevitability that Bama's going to get theirs. Like, they're going to get some points, kind of similar to LSU a year ago. Maybe not that dynamic, but feels like they're going to get theirs. But what's not inevitable, and you kind of touched on this earlier, is what's going to happen between an Alabama defense that's been a huge disappointment so far this season, Alabama fans, and then on the other side, you know, an inconsistent offense that Georgia's fielded in its first three games. I want to start with this Georgia offense. I mean, this is a Georgia team that I think you tweeted something out about this, that they got the ball in Tennessee territory twice to start the second half last week, and they were only able to conjure up 6 points in those possessions. At this point in the season, do you feel confident that this offense can score enough points to keep the Dogs within reach of a relatively high-scoring Alabama team?
Well, I think the problem is with our defense or with our offense is mm-hmm. they're young everywhere, and that's not a good thing.
No.
It's not a good thing to be young everywhere. You can't do what you want to do. From a standpoint of, you know, next time you play Alabama in the SEC championship game, which will probably be,
yeah.
you'll be so much better prepared because there's just a lot of youth front. There's a lot of youth at wide receiver. There's just a lot of things that are going to be broken in that are going to take time to evolve. And so I don't trust them yet to be, you know, super dynamic and kill Alabama. Mm-hmm. But I do trust, I like Stetson Bennett's grit. His ability to scramble, by the way, and make plays is really good. I think I would make that a part of the game plan with more zone read, with more design stuff to take advantage of that, because you've seen mobile quarterbacks for Bama a lot of time hurt him. And Stetson's a really good athlete. He's not like a decent athlete. He's a really good athlete. Mm-hmm. So it's a young unit that's growing, that's learning. I don't know how much it can do yet from a standpoint, you know, the whole gamut of plays and the whole things you want to accomplish, but mm-hmm. it's good right now. And if they can run the football, if they can play action, if Bennett can be a part of it with wheels, Pierce Jackson continues to play well, and you attack the middle of the field, which Stetson loves to do. I think it's with Bama, you saw last week, there's a lot of plays to be made.
Bart Starr Award winner and Super Bowl champion Benjamin Watson returned to the podcast this year to update Dog fans on his life and career after retiring from a 15-year stint in the NFL. Benjamin discussed his new podcast that he and his wife recently reached, his new documentary that he helped to produce in 2020, and his career aspirations pertaining to politics and sports broadcasting. But as we transitioned to football in that conversation, Benjamin took a trip down memory lane to the time when he ran down Champ Bailey in an AFC playoff game. For those of you that don't remember, Benjamin, who is a tight end, watched as Tom Brady, his quarterback, threw an interception to Champ Bailey. And Hall of Famer Champ Bailey had to run the ball 90 yards to get to the end zone. Well, Benjamin Watson chased him down, and I think Champ lost a little bit of steam going into the end zone, and Benjamin did not. And Benjamin saved saved the play from becoming a touchdown. And I think that play was when New England Patriots fans knew what they had in Benjamin Watson, that they not only had a talented tight end, they had a player who was a team player who would put it all on the line to help his teammates and give 100% effort every play. We saw that over the years with him playing through injuries, doing what it took to contribute to the New England Patriots dynasty. Hope you guys enjoy this one with Benjamin.
There's been a moment that's resurfaced from your early professional career due to DK Metcalf's recent chase down, and that was your chase down of Champ Bailey in the 2005 AFC divisional round. First off, Benjamin, I got to ask, when you tackled another DGD and an NFL Hall of Famer and Champ Bailey on that play, were there any words exchanged between the two of you, or have there been any words exchanged since then?
Not at that time, because we were both thoroughly exhausted.
Yeah.
And so running that far in the playoffs, in the Mile High air, neither one of us said anything. And I have such great respect for Champ. I don't, you know, but part of me taking it was the fact that I knew it was him.
Yeah.
And he, for any Georgia player, really for players of my generation, he was a hero for us.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember coming out of high school in South Carolina, and Georgia played South Carolina in Columbia, and I was able to go to the game. And when I saw number four, when I saw Champ, it was like, oh my gosh, that's Champ Bailey, you know? And that was before I even got into college. And so at that point, we didn't exchange any words. But later on, when we've seen each other, it's kind of like an ongoing joke between us.
Yeah.
We were actually together in New Orleans with the Saints in the preseason of the 2015 NFL season. And so I was with the Saints. He came in the preseason. And none of the guys on the team, so that was 10 years before, none of the guys on the team really remembered that, because a lot of the guys, you know, weren't even in the league at that point. They weren't even in college. And so at one point in the dog days of training camp, somebody pulled it up on YouTube, and that gave us all in the locker room at the Greenbrier where we were having training camp, gave us all some great laughs looking at these two quote unquote old guys running after each other.
So. Wow. Well, I know it was one of your dreams was to be an NFL football player, and I know the other was to be a missionary. And you've lived out both of those dreams in different ways. But last time we had you on the show, you spoke about a little man of yours who has some dreams of his own, and one of those was to play for the Georgia Bulldogs like his father before him. I got to ask on behalf of our listeners, is that dream still alive?
It is. And the thing with him, with Isaiah is his name, he's 9 years old. And so, you know, it's funny, you know, we had some snow up here, 5 inches like last Friday.
God, that's crazy.
Up here in Boston.
Yeah, it's going to be a big adjustment for him coming down here.
I know. He's playing flag football. He wants to play tackle, but we're not on that train yet.
Uh-huh.
So he plays flag football, and I was looking at him out there with snow around him, and I had like a flashback to when I first came up here to Boston from the South and was playing in the snow, you know, in the NFL. And it was just really, you know, those moments you have as a father when you kind of see something in your son that reminds you of yourself, something that happened.
Yeah, yeah.
But he is beyond, he's every Saturday, he comes downstairs with a Georgia t-shirt on, his Georgia shorts. He'll have a Georgia hat on. He is ready. One of the things he can't wait for, and I can't wait for it either, is when we do move back to Georgia next year, to go into our first game really together between the hedges.
Oh, man.
In person, hopefully, and can enjoy it together. So
yeah.
he's definitely trending that way. Thanks for asking about him, but he's definitely gung-ho football, gung-ho Georgia all the way. I'll be a dog till I die. Till I die,
till I die. All right. Well, Corey Amick is back with us for our Peach Bowl episode / college football playoff episode. Corey, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Derek. It's nice to have Georgia football on the horizon again.
I know. Honestly, this has obviously been the weirdest year ever, but it doesn't feel like football season anymore. It's weird that we still have games, but we are airing this at halftime of the Florida game. So my prediction for Florida was going to be Oklahoma. And now that Oklahoma's up, I'm kind of nervous. But at the same time, like, Florida has no players right now. So I'm hoping that they finish as, like, the best four-loss team of all time.
Yeah, I think my dad texted me in the first half of this game, and he said the following quote, "I hate Todd Grantham. I think he is a fat, angry man." And I think if there was one way to sum up this season for Florida, it would be that, and then Dan Mullen trying to start a fight at like midfield.
Yes, I hope that Grantham keeps his job over in Gainesville. He's certainly getting paid enough where it'd be hard to fire him, but I would hate to see him go. He's just, he keeps them from becoming great, in my opinion. I mean, Dan does his best as well. Well, Corey, we're going to do our picks. I didn't really do six games this time. We're just going to do college football playoff and the Georgia game. So first up, we've got the Rose Bowl, which is, I believe the Rose Bowl is Alabama and Notre Dame. First off, let me say, they should have retired the Rose Bowl after the Georgia Rose Bowl game. Every Rose Bowl after that is like a bad sequel movie. It's like a knockoff, like Walmart brand Rose Bowl. Hang it up in the rafters. It's never going to be topped.
I think it'll be strange for UGA to go back to a Rose Bowl one day and have it be like, no matter what, even if we win by like two touchdowns or three touchdowns, it'll never be as good of a moment as, you know, that game.
No, we could win a national championship in Pasadena and they call the game the Rose Bowl. And then when people would say, "Hey, remember the Rose Bowl game?" "Oh, no, like the other Rose Bowl game, the one where we won a national championship." Like, it would always be the other Rose Bowl because the first game is just too iconic.
Yeah.
And every Rose Bowl game that's happened since then is just not right.
Well, I will say, does this year open up new opportunity for the Rose Bowl to move around? Like, what if the Oakland Raiders see this as an investment opportunity and decide to, or not Oakland, the Vegas Raiders.
I was going to say.
Decide to host the Rose Bowl in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, the Rose Bowl is just this rotating, the Rose Bowl presented by X company that will pay large money to have it sponsored.
Yeah, I don't know. But I'll say, I got Bama. The most 2020 thing, if we're saying 2020 is the year where just like stupid stuff happens, the most 2020 thing, other than Stetson Bennett leading Georgia to a national championship, now that that's out of the question, the most 2020 thing is Notre Dame winning it all.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the perfect way to end this year, that we would all look back and be like, man, that year truly sucked.
Yeah,
and I, like, if Notre Dame got to win.
Well, I'll feel that way if Ohio State wins it, but I'm here. Like, I would love it at this point if Notre Dame did it. You look at the other teams, like Alabama, who beat Georgia, Trevor Lawrence at Clemson, who almost went to Georgia, and then Justin Fields at Ohio State. Like, I'd love to see Notre Dame and Ian Book, who we beat last year, beat all those guys. I just can't see it at all.
Yeah, I think that'd be quite the feat. I think, you know, Notre Dame, I saw this ranking the other day, and it was basically ranking the top, whatever, 25 or 24 teams that have played in a college football playoff game. And so it was like, for example, out of the top 10 teams, six of them were Alabama teams in the last like 5 or 6 years. But out of the bottom eight, like six or seven of the bottom eight were Notre Dame, or yeah, like five of them were Notre Dame teams. And it's like, this year's team is probably on that list just when it comes to faring against the other three.
Yes.
I think Bama's going to win pretty handily.
Oh, yeah. I think it's going to be
worse than the last time. Oh, yeah. I think it's going to be worse. But a part of me does think that Notre Dame will make it interesting, at least in like the first quarter or like a random third quarter comeback where people kind of tune back in and you're like, nah, this game's out of hand.
Yeah, I could see it. But Bama takes care. If Bama has more than 1 week to prepare for a game, like, when do they lose in that situation? Very, very rarely. Notre Dame, on the other hand, seems to have the opposite track record under Brian Kelly. So I'm taking Bama by landslide. I don't know how Notre Dame comes back from it if that happens again. It took them so long to recover from the Manti Te'o blowout against Eddie Lacy. And then this is kind of their first time back on the cusp of greatness, and they get blown out by Clemson like that in the ACC championship. And now it's like they might face back-to-back blowouts this season and back-to-back in matchups against Alabama. Not what you want when you're vying for recruits and trying to sell them on being a legitimate contender. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I'd be kind of surprised if it was a real game.
The more exciting game to me is Clemson. Clemson and Ohio State. We've got Dabo just saying whatever he wants to say, giving them all the bulletin board material they need. We got Justin Fields saying that he's prepared more for this game than he has for any game this season. Which I don't know if I would say that if I'm trying to tell scouts that like I'm totally 100% prepared for every game. But nevertheless, he said that. So we've got some chatter on both sides.
Yeah, this is an interesting matchup. I mean, obviously, you look at how this unfolded last year, and it was an incredible game and came down to the wire. And Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence both played really well. And so if you look at the game this year, it's like, which team looks better? Like, which team has improved more? And I just don't know if Ohio State is as good this year as they were last year. I mean, I think Justin Fields has made some improvements, but he's only had six games to judge, and I don't necessarily know if he is this, like, if he's taken this incredible leap forward. Nah. Whereas you kind of already know, like, Trevor Lawrence is as good as he's, like, as good as he could possibly be as a college quarterback right now, and he can tear apart any defense. So if I'm looking at the matchup this year compared to last year, I like Clemson even more this year just based on their resume and just based on what I know I can get versus it's going to kind of take a one-off performance from Ohio State on all sides of the ball to take a team like Clemson down where, you know, Clemson was embarrassed and they won another shot. And
I agree with you. If you're looking at it on paper, this feels like Clemson's better than they were last year. Ohio State's worse than they were last year, and Ohio State already lost last year. So you got to go with Clemson. Yeah. But I'm actually I'm going with the Buckeyes because just too much chatter from Dabo, too much hating on Ohio State for only playing six games, and I get it. And they haven't had the most impressive six games either. But it's like they've got a talented roster. They're probably more healthy than any other team in college football right now, and Justin Fields is capable of single-handedly beating any team on any given night, and he's feeling himself right now. And I think Trevor Lawrence, as good of a college quarterback as he is and as good of a pro prospect as he is, I would take like a Joe Burrow over him. He's more like, from what I've seen over the years, he's more prone to make mistakes than like senior year Joe Burrow. And obviously a lot of that has to do with the fact that Burrow was like 25 years old playing college football. Trevor Lawrence is still a kid. But it's like, he's not a god out there. Like, he's capable of losing a game. He's capable of throwing a couple picks. I mean, so is Justin Fields. So I think this game could go either way. I think Clemson's the better team, and I just have this gut feeling that 2020 happens and Ohio State gets revenge. They just used last year's game as fuel for overcoming Clemson and finally taking them down after waiting a whole 12 months. So I'm picking Clemson against Alabama. I'm picking Ohio State against Alabama in the national championship.
If Clemson goes down to Ohio State, What is your quick synopsis of Dabo's post game presser
it will be must watch TV. I can tell you that much. Like, he would not be a good loser to Ohio State this year. Like, he's already kind of shown signs that like he's going to stop the count if Clemson gets up, and he's going to whine about it if they lose. So. That will be must watch TV. Dabo, that's why I feel like it's going to happen, just because the world needs that Dabo Sweeney press conference after losing to a 6-win Ohio State.
I think it's so funny, just the transition from 2016, 2017, where everyone was like, oh, I hate Saban, like, it's the worst. But everyone hated Saban just because he was good.
Just
because
he was good,
Alabama
yeah.
was a powerhouse, and now it's like everyone hates Dabo, but we hate Dabo because of who he is, not because of his team. And I think it's just funny the difference in those two and how quickly Dabo went from the good old walk-on at Alabama that now he's one of the most like hated coaches in college football.
I think it's funny with Saban, the fact that like Georgia fans, most Georgia fans that I know, like, respect that guy more than anyone else in college football. And he's mm-hmm. broken our hearts. Like, he's taken recruits from us. He's stolen national championships from us and SEC championships. I mean, that guy has just been Georgia's. If you take him out of the SEC, Georgia wins it all 2012. Georgia wins it all 2017. Yep. They make the playoff 2018. I mean, he has been an absolute killer to the University of Georgia. But I'll see, even former players will retweet quotes of his or little videos of him talking and stuff. Like, everybody respects that man just purely based on the fact that he has been successful, and there's no arguing that he's just he's great at what he does. But Dabo's one of those personalities that people either love him because they're like, oh, he's a nice Christian man trying to do things the right way, or they're like, Dabo Swinney's just saying all this stuff to get recruits and he's a fake and, you know, he's Hugh Freeze but with a better program and with a worse Auburn of a program, kind of, I don't know, they have that kind of Auburn feel. I think he's become divisive, and somehow Saban's become like the one figure in college sports that everyone can just agree I respect the guy, even if he beats my team and embarrasses us on national TV like three times in a decade and then breaks our hearts the other two times we play. I respect him.
Yeah, I do think that Dabo is trying to go out as this a Steve Spurrier type persona. Yes. But people laughed at Steve. I feel like people just get angry at Dabo.
Yeah. And we'll see how Dabo's how his legacy ages in time, because there was a time when I remember when Saban went to Alabama and being like, he only got three wins at the Dolphins, like he's nothing special and and all this stuff. So over time he was more of a villain, certainly younger in his career. Now he's just this old successful guy and everyone's just like, yeah, you gotta take your hat off. But we got that national championship prediction to make. So Corey, you've got Clemson Alabama round 1000, the matchup. It's like if the Warriors and Cleveland Cavaliers played each other in the finals again. And I've got Ohio State, Bama. I'm picking Bama. At the beginning of the year, I actually thought when Ohio State had announced that they were going to have a season, I picked mm-hmm. them. I was like, they're going to win it all because they have less games and all these other reasons, like obviously Justin Fields and, you know, they've got talent. Ryan Day's a good offensive coach. And I just felt like everybody would beat each other up and Ohio State would come in and play like two good games at the end of the season. That's all they have to do to win the whole thing. Whereas the team like Alabama has to play Georgia and Auburn and all these SEC games and Florida before playing another tough game in the playoff and then a national championship. But from what I've seen from Ohio State, I'm just like, I don't think they're champions. Like, I don't think they're that team that's gonna face adversity and rise to the occasion. And Alabama, it's like there's never a question as to whether they're capable of that. We've seen them do it so many times over the years. I mean, they breed championship caliber football players in mindsets in Tuscaloosa. As much as I hate to say it, it's just the case. And you know, Saban's guys will be ready. I think their worst fear is playing Clemson, because Clemson's got some voodoo where it's kind of like Auburn, where it's like sometimes things just go their way against Alabama, whereas most teams that doesn't happen. And I know Ohio State's had success like under Urban Meyer against Alabama, but just looking at this matchup, like, I think Bama would definitely prefer to play Ohio State. And I think they win if that's the case. It's honestly, this Bama team is so good and they've been proven so much on defense. They're night and day from where they were when they played Georgia. They were terrible after that game. I was like, this team's not winning a championship unless mm-hmm. they fix a lot of things on defense. And I wouldn't say that they're old selves. They're not a Kirby Smart Alabama defense, but they certainly have improved. I think they're as good as LSU's defense was at the end of the year last year, and I think that's all it's going to take for them with the offensive firepower that they have.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with, you know, what Bama has going for them and the way they've improved.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Bama Clemson rounds like 45. It's like we're watching Endgame, but like it just keeps happening over and over and over again, and Nick Saban just keeps snapping his fingers.
Alternate reality.
I really think, like, you look at this game and you look at the wide receivers that Alabama has, you look at the receiving core that Clemson has, and you have Mac Jones and Trevor Lawrence, both Heisman finalists, and Devontae Smith, and I think this game's gonna highlight just how talented both running backs are too. I think,
yeah,
you know, Najee Harris and Travis Etienne, I think they're both gonna have pretty awesome games, and I think it's gonna be something where both teams are gonna prepare for the air raid type threat they're gonna see all night. And so I think the running backs are gonna have a great opportunity to prove themselves there. And I like that matchup with Alabama and their offensive line. So I think if I'm taking Bama Clemson, I'm taking this game, I mean, at least like a 35-38 type game. I think both teams put up points. I think Alabama wins it. I think it's going to be really close, but I do think Alabama and just Nick Saban, the amount of times he's been here before, the amount of times he's prepared his team for this.
Yeah.
And I do think that Saban might have a little bit of an edge just with the arrogance we've seen from Dabo this playoff season, that Saban's just more locked in, and I would never want to coach against like a quiet Saban. I think that's one of the scariest things in the world.
Oh yeah, for sure. I would much rather coach against a loud Dabo than a quiet Saban, no doubt. He's like a shark, you know. It's like he's not talking, he's just gonna eat you.
Yep.
That's Nick Saban. I think if that ends up being the matchup, if it ends up being Alabama Clemson, I think that's the, as much as we hate to see these repeat, you know, alternate reality end game matchups over and over again, I do think that it's probably the best matchup as far as football fans pulling for an entertaining football game. Bama's defense has improved, but like I said before, they're not Kirby Smart's Alabama defense. And Clemson, the night that Georgia played Alabama, Clemson would have scored 60 points in that game. Bama's defense was so bad. Mm-hmm. Now, like, I mean, they can run the ball on Alabama's defense. I think, obviously, Trevor Lawrence is capable of passing against anybody in his group of receivers. And it's going to come down to, like, has Bama's defense improved enough? Because we know their offense is going to score. Although, I will say, Clemson's defensive coordinator has certainly been the biggest challenge for Alabama offenses over the years. He's kind of had their number. So that's something to watch as well. But we know Bama's going to get theirs on offense, and it just comes down to how much does Clemson get theirs? Because it seems like if they can run the ball as well as we could against Alabama, they're going to get a lot of rushing yards. And then they don't have Stetson Bennett back there. They have the best college prospect ever at quarterback, and so who defeated Bama as a true freshman in the same game. So it's like, that's a tough task for Bama. I think Bama fans are going to be nervous about that Ohio State Clemson game, and I think if Ohio State wins, they're going to feel like they have it in the bag. I said before, I think the most plausible, like 2020, like I just don't think Notre Dame is plausible, but simply because of the Alabama matchup right out the gate. The most plausible like outcome that people would say, oh, this is so 2020, would be Ohio State winning the whole thing.
Yeah.
It'd be Ohio State playing a short season, having Dabo say they don't deserve to be in the playoff, ranking them like 13, and then beating Dabo, and then having Bama feel like, oh, thank God we don't have to play Trevor Lawrence and Clemson. We got it in the bag now. And then Justin Fields plays the game of his life. And how Georgia would that be for in a year where we were a quarterback away from overtaking Alabama, for Justin Fields to overtake Alabama? So that's like the karma ending that I could see happening. But I mean, I'm not picking it. I'm going to pick Alabama. But it's one of those things where it's like, if it does happen, I'd be like, we should have seen that coming, because it's 2020 and that, the way things have gone for Georgia this year, that would happen. The way things have gone for the SEC and Dabo and all these people that are whining about the Big Ten's, you know, somewhat advantage with a shortened season, like that would happen and come back to bite them. So we'll see what happens. But Corey, wow, man, it's going to be a long off season for us, on the show, and I want to thank you on behalf of our listeners for taking a moment out of your week so frequently this year to enlighten dog fans, also to entertain us with your witty and dry sense of humor. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show all year, and I didn't want the season to come to a close without thanking you for your contributions.
Well, yeah, and you know, luckily we have one more game to discuss and pick, and perhaps the appetizer of the big day on Friday.
Oh man, I have such an appetite for it as well. So last pick of the season, Georgia, Cincinnati in the bins. Probably the least significant game Georgia will ever play in the bins as far as implications are concerned. This year it feels like the bowl game means even less because like the early recruiting or early signing day is over and we already have most of our recruits. So there's not that like, oh, we could get some recruiting momentum and maybe it'll help us get one last guy. Like, I guess that could still happen, but it kind of feels like it doesn't have that big of a recruiting impact. Obviously, no impact on the national, you know, on our championship hopes because it's a bowl game. But nevertheless, like in the words of Brooke Whitmire, he was on the show several weeks back, but he was like, regardless, the Georgia Bulldogs are playing a game on Saturday, or in this case, Friday, and we need to pull for them to win it. And they're wearing black this time. So that definitely gives us reason to pull for them to win, because if they lose, then we'll have half the fan base wanting them to never wear black again.
Yes, I would love to see the number of like email requests that come from like a AOL email from like major donors that are like, are we wearing black again? Like threatening to pull their funding from the athletic program.
Yes. Oh man. It's probably happened. This game is weird because we've got so many guys out. I'm actually, hot take, I don't get mad about guys opting out of bowl games. You got to look at their position on the one hand, where if they feel like they've got a good draft stock and that they've got millions of dollars riding on it. And like a guy like LeCount playing in this game, like he doesn't owe it to Georgia fans. Like if he were to opt out, I would have been like, you know what? He came back for his senior year to try to win a championship. They didn't do that. He's risked millions of dollars all season long. It's like he doesn't owe an extra game in risking of millions of dollars to win a bowl game. Like he came here to win a championship. He didn't owe this year to us in the first place. So the fact that he's playing really says a lot about that kid. But I don't get mad about it because of that, but also because it gives Georgia a chance. Like last year, Zeus was the featured back for the first time in that bowl game. And it's like, it gives you a chance. We got Clemson game one next year. Like we need as many reps as possible for the guys that are going to be on that team. And so to me, it's more of an opportunity than anything else.
Yeah. I love for the younger guys and even the guys that are, you know, juniors this year that are going to have an opportunity to start next year.
Yeah.
I mean, all about real reps and getting them in the game. Like you said, I mean, I would love for every Georgia player that chooses to opt out from their career to just be encouraged by the college football community. And that's not the case.
I know.
I don't know how I feel about Kyle Pitts opting out and then offering like a video pump up speech to his team before the Florida Oklahoma game. Yeah. I think that's like once you opt out, you can kind of distance yourself of like, hey man, we're going to be playing, so we're good. So
you
can't
be like, hey guys, I'm here for you, even though I'm not actually there for you. I'm here for you.
Yeah, I think there's like a very good understanding of everyone's like, all right, go get paid, and you don't have to like pretend like you still care. Like that's totally fine.
Yeah, and it's okay to care and not vocalize it. Like you can watch the game and pull for them, and not like go on ESPN and talk about it.
Yeah, so I'm stoked for the guys that are opting out and taking the next step. I think that's why they come to the University of Georgia.
Yeah, that's
I think
the dream.
You know, that does a lot more for recruits than winning this bowl game against Cincinnati.
I agree.
So, but either way, excited for the game. I think, you know, back in my days of not being a Georgia fan, I watched a very entertaining Sugar Bowl, where a team in black and red blew out a team from an island 41-10. And I'm getting a similar vibe
from
this year's game. I've watched a few of Cincinnati's games and seen some of the highlights, and I just don't think they have enough firepower to compete with how our offense has clicked these last couple of weeks, and at least the last couple of games we've gotten to play.
Yeah.
I think the one way they stay in this game is if we turn the ball over, and since JT's been at the helm, we haven't really done that a whole lot. So I love the matchup. I'm excited for the younger guys to get some playing time. I'm excited for some of the, you know, early spring enrollees to, you know, be able to suit up and get a game day feel with the dogs. And I think it's going to be a good Friday. I think it'll be we'll be able to sit back and watch the second half with a little bit of ease, see some younger guys play, and then fully know that everyone that was tuning in early for the college football playoff games gets to see a very confident, very strong UGA leading us into, you know, 2021 with a big game to start the next season. So I like the dogs big. I'm going to say score-wise, I'm going to say 38-13 dogs.
Oh, that was pretty close to my score. Mine's a little closer, though. I actually initially, when I saw the matchup, I was like, Georgia's going to lose this game. We're going to be like when Auburn played UCF in the Peach Bowl after losing to us.
Yep.
But it's like SEC teams are notorious for, like, if they come short of their regular season goals, for just not showing up in the postseason. And on the other hand, like a team like Cincinnati getting to play in the Peach Bowl, like, this is like the Super Bowl for them. Like, this is the biggest game they'll ever play in. Whereas for Georgia guys, it's like an afterthought. Like, it's kind of a consolation prize and a bad one at that. And so that was my initial thought. But seeing the number of guys that have decided to play, because I assumed the bulk of the defense really would opt out and go pro or whatnot. Yeah. Even guys like Zeus, I wasn't sure what he was going to do. And obviously James Cook's out. But seeing the number of guys that have decided to play this game and hearing kind of what I've heard just from Kirby's press conferences and JT Daniels and all the rest, it seems like the offense is feeling good. And I think we've got enough guys on defense that'll be playing that I think Cincinnati's going to score some points, but I also think Georgia will make enough plays to win the football game. And it just, I mean, kind of like Baylor last year. I see that same kind of game. I mean, I certainly hope Georgia wins this game. I don't think it would be devastating to the program, and I think there will be a lot of overreactions if they don't. But I do think it would be good for the optics surrounding the team, as well as these guys building for that Clemson game right out the gate next year. Like, this is our preseason game for that, in my opinion, in my eyes. So really hoping JT Daniels, A, stays healthy, and B, continues to thrive in Todd Monken's offense and grow. And I'm picking a 38-24 game. So a little bit tighter than yours. I think it's one where it's a ball game for the bulk of the game, and Georgia kind of pulls away in the second half. And the players, I don't know, end up with a bunch of peaches at the end. Is that what they do? I don't really know what they do.
I don't know what they do for that one. I was very disappointed last night, or just yesterday afternoon, to learn that the Duke's Mayo Bowl doesn't actually have a Gatorade tub full of mayo up on the coaches. Yeah. It was just water. I think, like, that would have been the perfect catch of 2020, was to see Paul Chris just get, I mean, absolutely layered in mayonnaise after winning a bowl game.
For sure. That would be beautiful. And it's why have a Mayo Bowl if you're not going to do that, is my question.
Yeah, I think that's one area where the smaller bowl games, and obviously the Peach Bowl, this is the New Year's Six Bowl, there's you know, a reputable brand attached to it, and they can't really get away with this, but
right.
I love the smaller bowl, the where gimmicks. The social media team just gets to go absolutely wild, and everyone's like, this is the greatest thing. It's like those few golf tournaments on the PGA Tour where it's like you can actually go to this and get extremely drunk and, like, be rowdy at this golf course because of it's this one tournament that no one cares. And I feel like college football is this beautiful realm of, there's a lot of bowl games that are kind of like that, and where the social media teams jump on the train early to be like, let's just blow this thing up because no one really cares about the football.
Yeah, well, I'm all for the gimmicks in those games. I think they make it fun. I will say for a game like the Peach Bowl, I don't know if you've seen their social media / Twitter page, but they have put out several graphics where almost every player on Georgia's team is wearing the number 30 or 34 with dreadlocks, which is a retired number, obviously, because of Herschel Walker. And even the fake visors they put on are just like a block. Like, it looks like they could have made the graphic in Microsoft Paint. And this is the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, like New Year's Day. It says presented by Georgia Power on it. I mean, these are some reputable brands tying themselves to this bowl game and having these trash graphics being thrown out. So I don't imagine that Chick-fil-A or Georgia Power appreciates that too much, but who knows who's making those. But it certainly has been fun to join the Georgia Bulldog community and totally trashing them on social media.
Yeah, I think we can all come together on something like that. But I'm excited, man. I'm excited to have one more go with the Dogs, and no matter what, you know, be able to look back on the season and see that, you know, the team grew in a lot of areas, and we have a bright future regardless of how this game goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Corey, again, appreciate you joining us all season long. Listeners, appreciate you joining us all season long. You guys are the reason why we're able to do this. And it means a lot that you allow us to be part of your Georgia football experience. What an honor to be a part of the way that people take in Georgia football. We love it. We love you guys. Thank you again for your support. Leave us a review on the Apple Podcasts site and follow us on social media for future announcements regarding future seasons. Love you guys. Thank you, and God bless. Oh, one more thing. Go Dogs.